There we go. All right, everybody, let's go to Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9. 2 weeks ago, we ended in that. We have to do better in our Bible studies because David Vernon is getting more hits on the website than us. All right, so we're competing now. All right.
Chapter 9, sir.
Chapter 9, yes, sir.
Thank you.
All right. We're in verse 7. Now Herod the Tetrarch heard of all that was done by him, and he was perplexed because it was said of some that John was risen from the dead, and of some that Elias had appeared, and of others that one of the old prophets was risen again. And Herod said, John have I beheaded, but who is this of whom I hear such things? And he desired to see him. That's interesting because it just doesn't tell you much more about it there. Other gospels go into it more. But it's just this idea that here's Jesus Christ. He's out there. He's doing these miracles. And then he sends the disciples out and multiplies himself dramatically by sending them all out there. And of course, so they're all over the place, so he's not sure what's going on. You know, there used to be one guy like this. Now there's 12 of them out there operating. And so, you know, he's wondering, hey, what's happening here?
Pastor?
Yes, ma'am?
Side note. Did Judas cast him down?
Yes. And that's why in the tribulation, Judas has all power. Because he was given all these things. He has all these gifts. He was given them by Jesus Christ. All right. We get into verse 10. And the apostles, when they were returned, told him all that they had done. And he took them and went aside privately into a desert place belonging to the city called Bethsaida. So if you were to go to the city of Bethsaida, you'd see a desert place. Who knows how big it is, but it's associated with that city. And he takes them out there. And, you know, if I were to make any comment on that at all, I'd just say this. It's impossible to be in the ministry of Jesus Christ, no matter what your ministry is, without from time to time getting alone with him. Just absolutely, you must have time. When you get alone with him.
That's right.
You know, we just had a trustees meeting. It's a great thing to have, but if my trustees aren't getting alone with Jesus Christ from time to time, we're in trouble.
That's right.
You know, it's important I get alone with him. Every mother, it's important she gets alone with him. You know, everybody who's a student of the Word of God, important that you get alone with him.
Yes, sir.
And spend that time with him. So here they've had this, they've gone out there, they've done well, but get alone with him. Verse 11, and the people, when they knew it, followed him, and he received them and spoke of them of the kingdom of God and healed them that had need of healing. And when the day began to wear away, then came the 12 and said unto him, send the multitude away that they may go into the towns and country round about and lodge and get victuals, for we are in a desert place. In other words, if they want to eat, this ain't the place to do it. All right, nobody talk about Sharon anymore. She's come.
Specs.
All right.
Relevance.
We're in Luke chapter 9, Miss Sharon. And we just read 12, about to do 13. So he says, but he said unto them, give ye them to eat. And they said, we have no more but 5 loaves and 2 fishes, except we should go and buy meat for all this people. So, really what we're going to get into, and I'm going to look at this to some extent here, is a repeating miracle that he does a few times. And it's the idea of feeding people out of nothing. Just taking something and feeding them. And we're going to look at it here. Verse 13, be sent unto them, give you them to eat. And they said, we have no more but 5 loaves and 2 fishes, except we should go buy meat for all this people. And there were about 5,000 men. And he said to his disciples, make them sit down by fifties in a company. Now it's interesting here, and kind of goes back to our elders' meeting. Even in this, he wants order to it. You're not just throwing stuff out there for everybody. You're going to have an order to this thing. We're going to look at this thing. Everybody's going to get a certain amount. So even when he's doing miracles and he's multiplying things, it's done with an order. One of the ways that Job described hell is he described it as a place without order. And I never forget hearing a man preach that one time. It really convicted me about my own life, how disorganized it is and such. But it's, so, Mason sit down by 50, and they sat down, and they did so and made them all sit down. Then he took the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, and looking up to heaven, he blessed them and brake and gave to his disciples to set before the multitude, and they did eat and were all filled. And there was taken up the fragments that remained to them, 12 baskets. Other places, I think it says 7 baskets. Here it's 12 baskets and such. And of course, there's sermons preached who gets the 12 baskets. And, well, there's different places where it's given out and such. Who knows? One for each apostle? I have no idea. It doesn't say. There's sermons preached on it. The smartest I've ever heard probably went to the person who donated the 5 loaves.
Well, in John 6:7-9, it says there was a lad there which had 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes.
Yeah. So the young man that brought the food, probably he's the one, you know, wouldn't that be the fair thing? All right, we're left over. You let this. Here's what you have left over. It's a lot more than he gave in the first place.
It could be that there was actually more than the 12, and it was actually whatever each disciple saw for themselves.
Possible. You know, go with me to 1 Kings. 1 Kings 4. Excuse me, 2 Kings 4. 2 Kings 4. You're going to find that if you go back before the Psalms, about a third of the way back in before the Psalms, you'll find 2 Kings, okay? Yeah, a little tougher to find in that. So 2 Kings 4, if you can't find it, we're not going to be there long. So you just listen to me.
Page
300. All right, Tim's got that same Bible.
Got 492 here.
All right. This is during the ministry of Elisha, and it says, verse 42. And there came a man from Baal Shalisha, and brought the man of God bread of the first fruits, 20 loaves of barley, 5 ear corns in the husk thereof. And he said, give unto the people that they may eat. And his servitor said, what should I set before 100 men? And he said, give the people that they may eat. For thus saith the Lord, they shall eat and shall leave thereof. So he set it before them, and they did eat and left thereof according to the word of the Lord. So what Jesus does here is really an Old Testament miracle. Okay, it's something that was done in the Old Testament, and Jesus Christ then reproduces it a couple of times. He feeds the multitudes like that. And he really does that as a prophet. He's doing that. Keep in mind, he's a prophet, he's a priest, he's a king. He's each of those things. Here, we see him operating as a prophet. This isn't anything. For anybody who read their Old Testament, all they said, hey, the same thing happened to Elisha, happened to us. Okay? He's fed the multitudes. What lessons the Lord got in this? Well, Dr. Harold Seitler, who ran Tabernacle Bible College for years and years, one of his most famous messages was, can God set a table in the wilderness? You know, when Israel was out in the wilderness and they believed God brought them there to starve them and destroy them, can God set a table in the wilderness?
Yes.
And you know, and that's what he preached on. Can he do that? So with that in mind, go to the book of Deuteronomy. Go to Deuteronomy 8. Deuteronomy 8, and this is Moses giving a wrap-up to everybody. He's preaching to them. He's already given the law. Deuteronomy is often called the second law. With that idea that he's reiterating, he's explaining to everybody what went on. All the commandments which I command me this day shall ye observe to do, that ye may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers. And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness. Number one reason, to humble thee. Number two, and to prove thee.
That's right, yes.
Number three, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou would keep his commandments or
yes,
no.
Sir.
And he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger.
Yep.
Now, you listen to so many preachers talk about, oh, God would never let his children suffer. It said here, he suffered them to hunger.
Sure he did.
Okay? And if you've ever served the Lord, you've had times when he did that to you.
Yep.
Okay? He saw to it that you did not have enough, where the divine God of glory, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Jacob, singled you out and put you in a place where you don't have enough. Randy?
Out of curiosity, no, that kind of reminded me. How do you come across someone like a Jehovah's Witness who personally believes God will not do a single shred of harm when he basically just said he can't?
Well, two ways to handle that, Randy. Number one, he's not harming them doing this. He's actually making them better.
Right.
Okay? When you went out there that day and chopped all those pieces of wood beyond anything you ever thought you could do, and you did it, okay? Sweat like a dog, okay? Was that to your harm or to your help?
Great workers, that's to see.
That's right. Okay, he came in, you know what he had that flush of having done a bunch of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some Randy's never known before in his life, having done a ton of work before. And, you know, he thought, I'd given him so much wood to do every day, and knows he finally knew how to do it. And so finally, there's 70 big pieces of wood out there, and I said, if you have that done, I gave him a time, I said, there's $50 for you. Well, he didn't think in a million years he could do that.
Honesty, God.
But you know what? You know what God uses? You know what industry uses? You know it's been used all through history to motivate people? You pay. Okay? And that's not wrong. That's not bribery. That's what it ought to be. And so it's one of those things. And it's almost 100 degrees outside, but at the end of the day, there's wood all over the place. Old Randy did. And he came in, he was in ecstasy. He really had that thrill of having done a bunch of work. And never in his life ever knew that before.
Good.
Never had an idea what that was like. So, but the thing is, if someone was watching you, they'd think I'm hurting you because you're sweating and you're hot and you're in agony. But I wasn't hurting you. I was helping you.
Right.
So someone watching Israel here would think God's hurting them. But he's not. He's helping them. He's teaching them about God. He's teaching them.
Can I say something real quick?
Go ahead.
And I always tell Amy this, and gosh, I don't pray for it in a million years, but I know I always look at my wife and I tell her, honey, when we're in those times where God is suffering us the hunger, when we just don't have enough, that's when we're closest to God.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something I've realized over the years, that when God brings us to that point, we're about to get close to God. And it's a hard time, but in the end, we look at each other and go, I mean, how good has God been to us through that time?
Yeah. God bless it during those times. Yep.
That actually does remind me. I believe in here I've commonly heard, how close are you to God when times are good as compared to when times
are
bad?
I'm just telling you.
Yep. People have a way of trying to judge God when times go bad, but we're seeing God's motive, and he's humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger.
That's what it is, yeah.
And fed thee with manna which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee to know that man doth not live by bread only, but
Amen.
By every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God, out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live.
That's right.
Okay. So, one of the things the Lord has used over and over again is this whole idea, just your very supply of your basic needs in life.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't bother God for 5 seconds to shut them off to prove a point to you. That's exactly where things are coming from and exactly how he's handling things. And when he does, okay, he shut things off.
Actually, that's the same verse that when he's tempted of the devil, he's looking with, he used that same verse from the devil.
Ruth Ann just brought up when he was tempted of the devil. That's the exact same verse he brought up to the devil. Okay? This is what God does. All right? Man does not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. And it doesn't bother the Lord to take somebody that he absolutely loves and put them through a period of time where they think God has abandoned them, where God has nothing to do with them. And then invariably, when I look back on those times, they're never as bad as I felt like during the times. Now, during the times, you feel awful. But when you look back at them, you never feel that way. One of the things, just from time to time, I've asked the older people in the congregation. I'll look at Dick Harbeck and Paul and the older ones there, and I've looked at Jim and that. Did God ever abandon you? Did God ever take you and ha ha ha, you paid the tithe and now you're destroyed? And I've had times where I wondered, okay? And I've heard so many testimonies of people who one week decide, well, we won't give our tithe. We don't have enough, you know, to pay the bills or whatever. And then, you know, 2 weeks later they look back and, you know, they tell the stories of the wild things that just come out of nowhere and go wrong and such. And you know what? It's one of those things. And I've always loved this. I took Dick Botens and Paul Gordon, and I had them in the back there. And it's a time when we just had two deacons. And I'd had a lady in the church tell me that she couldn't tithe. And she was upset over it. She and her husband had argued. Her husband didn't want her to tithe. She was upset. And I had told her, if your husband doesn't want you to tithe, I don't want a tithe check in there. Yeah, you know, we're not busting families up. This church will make it and such. But I wanted to talk to my deacons. So, you know, hey, I've said this, and I'll never forget both Dick Botens and Paul Gordon both saying, we had to learn to tithe. It didn't come natural to us. Both of them said it. They said, you know, we remember when we'd hold back our tithe and the agonies. We remember when we gave it and the blessing. Yeah, yeah. We learned that, and we know that this lady has the same process she has to go through. Her husband has the same process. They have to learn this. And I was never so comfortable with my deacons as that moment, realizing, you know, they're human beings who had to learn the same thing. But it's just learning that you don't live by bread only.
That's right.
There's other things that are involved in your life that are more important in your life. One of the demonstrations the Lord did in the Old Testament and then did again in the New Testament is just create food out of almost nothing, out of thin air, and feed people because he's able to do it at any given moment he can do it. What I've learned is when my family is pulling its belt in and we're looking and we're thinking to ourselves, there's no way in the world we can make this. One time will happen where a check comes in the mail. Oh, I didn't know it was coming or whatever. You know, and you're so excited. And thank God. So the next time it comes up again.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine. And you go to the mail, there's no check.
That's right.
And you go to the mail the next day and there's no check. And you go out somewhere and there's a bill you weren't expecting that has to get paid. And when the time is over, you made it through a time that you swore you couldn't make it
That's
through,
right.
And God never stepped in.
Yep.
The miracle was you made it through it. Mm-hmm. He never delivered you at all. He just got you through something you never in a million years thought you could get through it. Mm-hmm. And then the next time, it's not that, it's not the check, it's something else. And just, I don't think he's ever delivered me the same way twice. But he's there. He multiplies the fishes, he multiplies the loaves at his behest, at his timing. When he wants to do it, and when he doesn't want to do it, keep in mind, he's in charge. He said, all power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Mm-hmm. And if he has the power to change your entire situation, but with his power, he puts you in your situation. You say, well, I'm in my situation because of foolishness, okay? I was just counseling with some gentlemen recently where there's a situation really out of foolishness, so we got ourselves into trouble. And again, our God put us there, okay? Expose something, show us something going on inside.
Yes,
and said, hey, this is what's going on. You know, this is what I want taken care of. He's the one in charge of it, okay? You always keep that in mind. He's in charge of this thing. All right.
That's good.
So back to Luke.
Pastor?
Yes, ma'am.
In that verse in Luke, I noticed something.
Okay.
It's not like Jesus didn't say, oh no, you don't have enough money to do it. They said that they'd go out and buy the food. But he wanted to show something.
That's a good point. Yeah, they were willing to go out and buy it. Maybe they were hoping he'd cough it up.
Going back a little to earlier in the subject concerning tithes, would that be the one time you go necessary risk for? Now, reason why I say that, because a while back I remember you telling the story of a certain man was offered to give money a few times for the church, a few times past, convince himself not to do it because he's tied on bills. Next morning, finds a check that could pay it all off, falls in tears because he didn't do the tithe thing.
Right. A man by the name of Jim Smith told that story. And he just talked about one particular time, him being very pricked of the Lord to give a certain amount of money. And he convinced himself in church that if he did, his family couldn't make it. And yet he felt strongly pressured to do it. He quenched the Spirit of God. He didn't do it. The next day, a check came in the mail that had been in the mail for 2-3 days, finally came in the mail. And he actually wept because he realized that he did not trust God. He flunked the test. God had it all in hand. He could have handled it if he'd given away. That's what the one Randy's talking about. A tithe, though, isn't an offering. There's two different things. Tithe is when you take 10% of the money that you have coming in, and that 10% you automatically give. Now, my position is this. This is my position. It is not my decision what to do with that money. That money goes into the house of God, and it is just something that is an obligation of mine as a member of this church. It goes in there. I tithe the expense money this church gives me. If it runs through my hand, bam, it goes in there. And it's up to this church as a congregation to determine what to do. I've known people who felt their tithe money could go into missions one week, go into the... No, that's right. A member of a church, so you're different. A family.
That's right.
You know, here's how the families voted to take care of it. Here's what we're doing. But an offering is different. Your tithe is in there. Now, let's say that you had $1,000, so you put $100 in the tithe. You have $900. That's your money outright. Do whatever. You go buy bubble gum if you want. You know, it's your money, okay?
Buy bubble gum.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's yours to do with what you want. But you say to yourself, you know what, I'd like to give extra. Now, that's not tithe anymore. That's an offering, and it can go wherever you want it to go. Okay? If you want to put it in the house of God, put it in the house of God. You want to go give it to the mother of the unknown soldier, go give it to the mother of the unknown soldier. It's, you know, wherever you want it to go, that's up to you. You've already taken care of your obligation to the church. Okay? And again, it's one of those, I don't stress that huge, and at some point we'll probably get into that again. With the idea that I personally believe that if you are a member of a church, that a tithe should go into that church.
Yes, sir. That's right.
On a regular basis, and that is not offerings, that's not even yours to decide what
that's
to
right.
do with.
Yes, sir. Yep.
But that still goes to my basic question. Is that the time where you make a risk on your finance concerning tithes?
Well, it shouldn't be a risk because it should be the very first thing you do.
That's right.
Okay? So you still should have 90% left over. So it's not a risk.
Okay.
All right? I have known people pay all their bills and then finally all that's left is the tithe money and they're in agony giving it. And I've learned that's a mistake.
That's right. No question.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. Give it first. Give it off the top.
That's right.
Yeah, and give it off the top. Be done with it and over with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and hey, and people just have lessons to learn.
That's right.
There's a fear of God that you learn typing.
They're
just, it's there. I welcome it. And, you know, and it's everybody has to go through it. Not an easy thing to learn. But it's the old people have said this for more centuries than any of us have been alive. And that's that you can live better off of 90% of your income than you ever can off of 100%.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's right. It's like Chris said, you can't put that on a calculator and make it make sense. But you can't put these fishes and loaves on a calculator and make them make sense. Okay? But You go to the old people in this church that have paid their tithe. Jim and Bonnie have paid their tithe. The Harbecks have paid their tithe. The Gordons have paid. You know, the Battises have paid their tithe. Are they suffering? Do they have houses? Do they have cars? You know, do they have... Yes, they have all those. Did they always have those things? No, they'll tell you stories of suffering. They'll tell you times they didn't know how anything was going to happen next. They had all those times and such, but made up their mind, this is the way we're going to do it. I can take you to people their age that do not have security, don't have their homes, don't have any of it, and you'll find that most of them made up their mind at one point or another, they're never going to tithe, they're not going to do that, they can't afford it, and you know what, they never will be able to afford
that's
it.
That's right, never.
Okay.
Got to make sure of that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so back to Luke chapter 9. He's done this miracle of the loaves and the fishes. Verse 18. And it came to pass, as he was alone praying, his disciples were with him, and he asked them, saying, whom say the people that I am? In other words, you've been out there, you've been mingling with all these people, you've listened to all the scuttlebutt on the streets. Who do the people think that I am? Randy, that's one of those places he restricted his knowledge. Okay? He knows what everyone's thinking in their heart. But as a man, he restricts his knowledge and lets them tell him what's going on. Okay? And yet, you might find the next chapter is reading someone's thoughts. So, it's something there where he restricts when he does that and how he does that.
So in that case, does it come a point where he takes that barrier off himself?
Yep.
When was that per se?
Well, right now.
At his discretion.
Yeah.
At his discretion.
He puts it on at various times throughout the Gospels, and I don't know, it'd be interesting studies to go through and look where he's restricted himself, where he hasn't. Might be a good study for you to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, time for that, actually.
Okay.
Good.
And you know what? If you find that fascinating, it'll be fun to do.
That's right.
Okay.
Good question. Yes, sir.
All right. So the thing is, verse 19, they answering said, John the Baptist. Apparently that's the number one thing. But some say Elias. Because one of the prophecies is Elijah was supposed to come again. Others say that one of the old prophets is risen again. Now it's interesting because none of them are saying it's the Messiah. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are all these different guesses out there, but, you know, there's none of them saying that. He said unto them, but whom say ye that I am? Peter answered, saying, the Christ of God. Now, again, what does that word Christ in English? That's Hebrew. What's English? Anointed. That's exactly right there, Mrs. Spencer. Very good. All right. So the thing is, three different words in three different languages, okay? All mean the same thing. Messiah is Hebrew, Christ is Greek, anointed is English, okay? You are the anointed of God, you are the Messiah of God, you are the Christ of God. This is what he's saying. He's saying, I believe that's what you are. Now, again, Luke is not emphasizing that. Luke deals with the flesh more than any other of the disciples when he writes his gospel. Why? He's a physician. There's more on the virgin birth. There's more on the physical things of Jesus Christ in Luke than anywhere else. Because again, that's what his emphasis is when he writes the gospels. Let's go to Matthew chapter 16 and let's look at that exchange there. Look at verse 13. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? Okay, who do you think I am? They am. And they said, some say thou art John the Baptist, some say Elias, some others Jeremias, or one of the prophets. Okay. Verse 15, he saith unto them, but whom say ye that I am? And And Simon Peter answered, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. More complete answer that Matthew gives here. Verse 17, Jesus answered and said unto him, Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. So the thing is, how did Peter know that Jesus was the Christ? Because he was spiritually instructed to that. Most people today who believe that Jesus is the Christ believe it because flesh and blood showed it to them. Okay? Somebody explained it to them. They learned it in a Sunday school class. Those are the kind of people that are always going to be in some kind of doubt, wondering, whatever else. But when a person's born again, God puts that, the Father shows it to them. He puts it on their insides. They know that Jesus is the Christ more than they know that their heart's beating. They know it more than they know their own soul. They know that Jesus is the Christ. It's born in me. It's part of me. It's something the Father sent from above. Now with that in mind, I want to go back to 1 John, just before the book of Revelation, 1 John 5. Now, if you're going to be a hypocrite, let people know you're going to do it. So I'm going to be a hypocrite here in a moment. Last night, David Vernon preached on the Son of God because we've been going over this and then forgot to record it. So I told my kids and they all gave him a hard time and then I forgot to record Pastor Hayne. So I'm kind of somewhat of a, it's like Stephen said, Dan, he's like the best two times he's preached since I've been here. Last week and this week. And last week's it just went fluey, something in the process, lost it. This week, you know, I even had my phone out ready, and I thought, well, we'll wait till he's done with prayer requests, and then I sat there transfixed till he started. Oh, and never pushed
the... think you recorded it, but...
Yeah.
Guess that's karma for you.
Yeah, so, you know, so there, you know, there it goes. But, again, I can forgive myself that, but we're not forgiving David Byrne. Yeah. All right, that's and just hypocrisy. Just we're not gonna. All right, that's all there is to it. I told my kids, my wife gave his wife a hard time. Oh, you know, it just, you know, there you go. All right, so. I told him, I said, your fans will throw. By the way, he's now the number one place looked at our website. And if you hear him preach right now, he's just in a sanctified place with God. He's just him and God are just. I've been there. I've watched Dale there. But you just get in this place with God where it's rare. You've been alone with him. You step in that pulpit. It wouldn't bother me if people get ready to stone me. I have what I'm going to say. It's just from God.
Wonderful.
There it is. And it's just, and the Spirit of God just flows. We had that during Youth Week. That was going on all week here and such. But David Vernon's there right now. And when he gets it, when Ruth Ann and I sat there, he wanted me to preach at 11 o'clock. I said, I'm not coming to your church if you want me in the open the 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to go there.
I'm not going.
And so, you know, all right. He preached the 11. And people are just weeping. They're just sitting there. My sons are weeping. My wife's weeping. They're just sitting there weeping while the man's preaching. I mean, just tears running down their face while he's preaching. And I love that. You know, will he always be? I'd like to think he's always there, but he's there now.
That's right.
Right now, he's the number one place people are going on our website when he sends those. And if you want to see my boys rattled, he doesn't, you know, those, Dad, he doesn't have his message up. Dad, get a hold of him, you know. I give him a hard time, but I love it.
Great, he has some loyal stalkers.
Yep. And there again, you couldn't get a guy more of a country bumpkin.
That's right, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is he trembles before he preaches. He's actually afraid.
Yeah, he is.
His hands are actually tremble before he preaches. He is so afraid to get up there. And yet when he does, this absolute power flows when he's preaching. And I love it. You can go to the website, and Bryson knows how to do this, and Bryson will be doing more of it, because we're kidnapping him, and on the website, and we can cut those CDs and such, so that you can listen to them, because they really are good.
Yeah, but only if they get recorded.
He didn't record Wednesday, so we hate him. All right, and we're forgiving me. All right, so 1 John 5, we want to get into this thing of Jesus being the Christ. Verse 1. Whosoever believeth that Jesus is the Christ is born of God. So the first question is, when Peter said to Jesus, "Thou art the Christ," is he born of God?
Yes.
Yes, he is. Now, I can go downtown Cuba and ask a drunk, "Is Jesus the Christ?" Sure he is. My Sunday school teacher said so. But is he speaking that because flesh and blood showed it to him, or because the Father in heaven showed it to him? Okay. We know Jesus already spilled the beans all over Peter. He's speaking it because the Father showed him. Okay. It's nothing that flesh and blood showed him. When flesh and blood shows you, all you are is a nominal professing Christian. It's when the Father shows you, and bam, that born again experience, Jesus is the Christ, it's born into me, I know it. You know, every year, the Arctic Tern will fly from the South Pole to the North Pole, twice a year actually, as the seasons turn. Ask an Arctic Tern, why do you do it? They don't have a clue. But they find it and they make it. The robins that'll be packing up and leaving here pretty soon will all go down to Costa Rica. They'll be down in Venezuela. It's where they are. Okay? You get out in those jungles and you're down there in our wintertime, you'll see the robins. You'll see the migratory birds. It's just part of their life. They're down there and they're the snowbirds, just like people going to Florida. They're gonna go down and head down there. And so you ask them why they don't have a clue why they go. The monarch butterflies, they all go to Mexico. Okay? And such. It's built into them. It's part of them. When a person gets born again, it's part of them that Jesus is the Christ. They
Amen.
Know it.
That's right.
It becomes part of them. And it's different, okay? Different than it ever was before. It's a different type of belief inside of them.
That's true. Yes, sir.
So whosoever believeth that Jesus is the Christ is born of God, and everyone that loveth him that begat loveth him also that is begotten of him. It changes them inside. You can't help but love the people of God. They might aggravate you to death, but if you've ever had children, they aggravate you to death, and you love them anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, you walk in, and they're all sleepy, even the little heads on that pillow, and you know, and your heart goes out to them, and 3 hours earlier, you were like, call CPS before I kill them, you know? And,
oh, no.
You know? Verse 2, but we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep his commandments.
There it is.
For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous. For whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world, and this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. What is that faith? Believing that Jesus is the Son of God. Believing he's the Christ. That's the victory. Okay? That's what Peter had. That's what Peter has. You'll find people who believe that it was impossible to be born again before the cross. That's nonsense. It's obvious that Peter's born again before the cross. Okay? That's as obvious as can be.
Pastor, why would Jesus have baptized them if they aren't?
There's other reasons to baptize. Okay? And we'll be going into that some of the subsequent Sunday schools, but there's other reasons than just the born again experience. Verse 5, who is he that overcometh the world but he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God? Okay, Jody had an experience. She talks about July 2nd, where finally it became real to her. Okay? At that point, she finally overcame the world. It wasn't overcoming the world, you know, straightening her family out, getting a different home, all that. That wasn't overcoming the world. She overcame the world when the Lord finally showed her that you don't trust me. This is what your problem is. This is what your problem is. This is why you're in sin. You don't trust me. And when he broke her on that, she saw that, believed on him. Then she overcame the world.
Amen. That's good.
And if you watch her on a daily level, it doesn't always look like it.
Yeah, no.
All right, but at the same time, in God's eyes, it happens.
That's good. That's
okay?
Right.
There it is. We're going to have Trainer how to work this thing.
So on a clarification note, is submission unto God pretty much the only way of overcoming the world, so to say?
It is the only way. The problem is how to submit to God. Okay? A person really can't do it till they're born again. Then he allows them to overcome the world. He lets them do that, okay? You know, this week I've been passing out this thing, God said, let there be light. He commanded the light to go out.
That's good.
But you have to let the light in.
That's right.
Okay? He said, let there be light. Okay? He commanded it to go forward, but you have to let it be there. That light can be, and that's just, you know, one of those things there. When you let that come, then he gives you that power to overcome the world. Even that faith, he puts that in you, and it becomes a different thing. It's no longer a chore doing the things of God. It becomes a pleasure to do the things of God, and works differently. All right, well, we can go back to Luke chapter 9. Yeah? You know, Tanya's asking, well, look at verse 21, and we'll go into Tanya's question. And he straightly charged them, commanding them to tell no man that thing. And later on, he tells them to go tell everybody. And so the best thing I can say is timing is everything.
Timing, no question.
Okay? You're in a transition period of time. There's certain times you don't tell anybody this, other times you go tell everybody this. And it's all a matter of timing. When do you say these things?
There's a reason, yeah, no question, yeah. God's timing.
My wife and I say that back and forth to each other once in a while when one's irritating the other. Well, timing is everything, you know. In other words, yes, I know I should have held the glass more closely, but while it's broken on the ground and there's milk all over, I don't really want to hear that said anymore. You know, this isn't the time that I want to hear about it. Mr. Randy?
Then what do you do with people who abuse that rule? I'll even give you an example. My grandfather and my uncle have this bad habit whenever they get into a fluster with their wives. They walk out for a little while, come back not as flustered as they were earlier with their wives, but they seem to think just being calm will get it resolved somewhat.
You know, I don't know your grandfather and your uncle and why they do that, okay? It may well be that that is the best way they know how to handle it. If they have wives who can handle that, it might be the best thing, okay? You have to watch that and decide how you're going to handle those things in life.
Well, I say that because I know my grandmother to take that little hat of his and throw it right back at his face as if he was doing a sin.
You know, your grandmother and grandfather, and you know the respect I have for them because of their love for you.
Right.
And it really has been one of the most wonderful things in your life. Okay? It's been genuine. It's been a wonderful thing. But they themselves will tell you they're not a good model of marriage.
More like
they'll tell you that. Okay.
More like they'll claim to be a good couple, but anyone from an outside factor will say otherwise.
Yeah, they've even told me otherwise, and they've told you otherwise.
I rest my case.
Yeah, yeah. In other words, take what they do well, and there's things they do well. And part of it is their love for you really is a wonderful thing.
Like Cliff Taylor is saying, take a steak, take the meat, leave the bone.
Yep, that's right. Good, you learned off of Cliff Taylor. We'll have to tell him that.
What?
Yeah. Hey, Dale just lost money. He'd be betting you'd never learn anything.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
If that were the case, he'd be broke already.
Yeah. All right, so verse 21, he tells, don't say anything. Verse 22, saying, the Son of Man must suffer many things. In other words, it's not time yet. Okay. And be rejected of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be slain and raised the third day. Now, it's interesting because when you go back to Matthew, Peter rebukes him over that. Mm-hmm. In other words, Peter said, far be it, Lord, that's not going to happen. And then the Lord rebukes Satan, who's coming out of Peter's mouth.
Sure did.
So it's fascinating. Bill Randall used to go it all the time. At one moment, out of Peter's mouth came the words of God, and the very next thing out of his mouth were the words of Satan. Now, how many of us here can raise our hand and say, oh, we've been there, right? You know, and it's shameful. You know, you stand there and you're stunned. But that's part of the experience of living as a Christian, is realizing that you have that old nature still with you, and the devil wants to come in and get it. Okay?
That's what James says, you know, do not become,
yeah,
bitter and sweet. You know,
yeah. All right. So, goes on, it says this, verse 23, and he said unto them, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. You hear me talk about that Methodist circuit rider, Peter Cartwright. And again, I love his autobiography, just because just rough and tumble, fist fighting, you know, Methodist preacher and such. But he talks about being in this one way out of the way settlement, and he preaches that. And later, he's going out of town. This old German farmer has his wife over his shoulder. And she's yelling. And he has to tell him no. In other words, he put his cross over his shoulder. And he's walking off.
His wife.
He got the old man German wife. She's like screaming at him. This old farmer just walking down the road. This is my cross, I'll bear it.
Jesus says, take up your cross. You know, bear your cross. So he took his wife over his shoulder.
In other words, Randy, the point is, everybody has their own thing that they have to suffer through that's yours. And it's usually different for each person, okay? And it's called your cross. This is what you have to bear.
That thing, that cross, is it the same thing that God will have against you? Or is it not necessarily?
Not necessarily. It's just, you know, right now, one of the crosses you bear is you're married to a man who ignores your boys, ignores you, and then once in a great while will turn and look at you. And it's a cross you have to bear. I don't have to bear that. Ruth Ann doesn't have to go through that. Jody doesn't have to do that. Okay? Sharon doesn't have to do it. Amy doesn't have to do it. But you do. It's your cross. Okay? And he told you, you bear that, Tanya. This is your cross. You bear it. Okay? And for every single person, there's some other cross. And
right, yes, sir.
You know, and you know something about a cross? They hurt. They kill. Okay? They're hard. And the night of time, you need help with it. There was a time when they got, you know, the command made him help carry the cross for a while and such.
I could be wrong in saying this, but could someone take that as, this is a scar I carry?
It's really not so much a scar. It's usually a wound that hasn't healed. All right? Scars are things that are over, past, but you still see evidence that it was there. This is something going on now. It's theirs and yours. If you talk to Jim and Bonnie, go over to their house, they'll sit there and tell you there's a cross they carry. Okay? You talk to John and Sharon, there's a cross they have. When John and Sharon came to this church, and I tell this story, they said, well, Pastor, we'll come, but we don't want to get involved because our sons have so shamed us, and we just don't feel we should get involved. And I told them this, and I mean this to this moment. I've never changed my mind. I need someone just like you in this church whose sons have gone and shamed them and say, but we're going to serve God anyway. We're going to go into the house of God. We're going to serve God. We're going to sing the songs of Zion. We're going to go in there and please the Lord in what we do. And one day you might turn around and see that it didn't change your parents one bit whatsoever. And let the world look and let the world say what they want to say, but here's what we're going to do, okay? And John and Sharon have done that since. They have absolutely served the Lord. Pray about those boys. Jim's got similar circumstances going on, stuff that'll break your heart, okay? And such, but he's just made up his mind that this is my cross to bear. I'm going to come into the house of God, and I'm going to take care of the house of God, and I'm going to bear these things. And for every one of you, you have crosses you have to bear. There's times they seem bearable, and there's times they seem unbearable. And if it was bearable all the time, it wouldn't be a cross.
That's right.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
But it's something that you have to bear. And he told you, pick it up, carry that thing, and go with it. Don't lay there and blubber like a baby. All right? Just pick it up and carry it. It's yours. Verse 24, and whosoever will save his life shall lose it. Okay? And, you know, one of the hardest things is just this idea, nobody wants to be foolish with their life. Nobody wants to spill their life foolishly. You know, it's one thing for a man to go give his life in battle or whatever, but it's another thing if he gets killed in a training accident because he's not paying attention, okay? And you'd be interested, Sam, the guy I worked for when I first got to Columbia, South Carolina, this Tim Walker, his father was the fifth most decorated man the United States Army had ever had. And he quit the Army in the late 1950s because they wouldn't let him train men anymore. And in other words, what they were allowing after the late 1950s is training. He said, that ain't training. And when he had been training in boot camp, if 2% of your men died, that was acceptable. Can you imagine that, Sam? If every 100 men, 2 died, that was acceptable. But those are the days when they made soldiers.
That's right.
And such.
Now they make soldiers.
Porter Walker.
So what?
Porter Walker was a prisoner of war in World War II and had no fingernails because the Japs burned each one off with phosphorus. Then he was captured with General Dean, if you know anything of the story of the Korean War, and went into captivity again in the Korean War. One of the few men to be a prisoner of war in both wars. And then in the 1950s, if anybody remembers the stories of Cambodia and Vietnam and that, Prince Sihanouk of Cambodia was being held in China, and Porter Walker was told, go pick some rangers and go take him out, and he did. He went into communist China with some hand-picked rangers that he trained and brought Prince Sihanouk into Cambodia. And fifth most decorated man the United States Army ever had. And but he just quit. They told him, we're changing the training, and he said, I can't fight with men like you're trying to give me. And you know, I'm going to trade. But the point I'm saying to that is this. No one minds a person, they lose their life doing what they're supposed to. But don't be foolish with your life. Don't That's lose right. it because yeah, you're being a fool. Okay? And, but the idea is, if you're trying to save your life, you're going to lose it, he says. You put your life out there for the Lord. Okay? Ruth Ann and I, years ago, read a book. I don't know if we could ever remember. Joe Tolston had that book about the couple that went to China. And Joe, Ruth Ann and I met in a servicemen's center run by a man by the name of Joe Tolston. Joe was in his 70s at that time. This is about 1980. Joe had taken care of an old missionary couple in the 1940s who had met in China, spent their life there, left when the Japanese took over China, and then died as old people, really, in his church, with him helping to take care of them. And while they were there, someone at the church sat down and wrote their life story out of these people who'd lived their whole life as missionaries in China. And they told the story of somewhere back in the 1910, 1920s or something, they're in China, and they knew a couple, an American couple, who they'd go over to their house. You know, 100 miles away, get on the train, go over there, there's an American couple, it's fun, wow, you're American. And they noticed a picture of two pretty little blonde girls that was on the mantelpiece in this house in China. Who are those two girls? They said, oh, those are our daughters that we wouldn't give to the Lord, and so we're here alone. What do you mean? They said, well, God called us to come to China, and we looked at those two little girls and said, we could never put them through that, so we told the Lord, when they're out of the house, we'll go. They were both out of the house in a year. Both died that year. Okay? And they said, if we had obeyed the Lord, those two little girls would have grown up with us right here. In other words, you try to save your life, you lose it. Okay? They never forgot that lesson. And those two people told everybody they knew, don't ever. I got into more trouble with my family thinking I was protecting my family, and in the end hurt them more by thinking I was protecting. And yet I've done foolish things and exposed my family at times they shouldn't have been exposed. And you just have to stay with God and where He is and know that when you're putting your life out there, you're doing it how He wants it done. But if you pull back your life and say, He said, you'll lose it. You're not going to save it.
Kind of reminds me of that one plant analogy you once gave a while back. You once said, in terms of parenting, three ways to do it. In terms of plants. One, greenhouse, raise it up for X amount of time, take it out, wither it away, and dies. Natural grown, use every gross thing it comes around. And third, survive in both environments.
Okay. Alright, and that's your, alright. I just say in the sense, if you're raising a plant, you guide it to all environments. You don't just leave it on its own. You don't just put it in a greenhouse where it's never challenged. The plants that we had hanging on their porch there for a while came from Houghton's Greenhouses in Vermont. And people would pass four greenhouses in Vermont to go drive to Bruce's, because Bruce had a way of his greenhouses of rolling the flaps up when it was about 36, 37 degrees and letting those plants get those chills. And then putting them back down when it was getting down to 32, and then putting them back up and hardening those plants off. And people knew when you bought a plant from Bruce Houghton that, by golly, it was going to survive. It was going to make it. He hardened that thing off and got it there. And it's the same way raising children. Know when to protect them, know when to harden them.
Yes, sir.
Know when to
yes,
do each one of them, and when to do each of those, and do it on that proper timing. Have we ever done it perfectly? No. You know, probably the older ones. The younger ones, we just screwed it up. No. That's why we brought Randy in, to have a chance to do something perfect for once.
What?
All right. Yeah. You're the only perfect kid we got, Randy. All right. So he goes on and he says this. Verse 23, take up your cross. Verse 24, whosoever will save his life shall lose it. Whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it. In other words, how long is your life going to be on this earth? Okay. You know, Moses said 70 years. Well, Jim's past that. Okay. Everything he has now, it says, by strength you live more. Okay. Jim's lived a basically healthy life. Not that it's been perfect, but he's worked. He's done these things. Jim might live well into his 90s and do well into his 90s. You have no idea, you know, how long Jim's going to... We don't know, okay? But the point is, let's say he lives 102 years. And then Jim dies. What really is that 102 years in eternity?
Yeah, that's right, nothing.
That little blink. Nothing.
Yeah, just a blink.
That little blink. It was nothing.
Okay? 1,000 years.
How many of you look back on little things that you quit too early as a kid and kick yourself now? My goodness, why couldn't I have just gone through that? Mm-hmm. Why couldn't I have just finished that little thing and done it? Look where I'd be today if I'd done it. And yet you quit it and you can't ever go back to it and it hurt you. Yeah. So the point is, what if you ended up losing your life for the Lord? He said, you got eternity. Okay? You've got eternity. You know, one particular time, and I'm a slow learner, but one particular time, I remember thinking to myself, well, Lord, it's easy for you to say, go ahead and lose your life, because you know God's going to resurrect you and sit you on the right hand of the Father and such. Yeah, pretty easy for you to do it. And I remember the Spirit of God asking me inside, well, aren't I going to do that for you? Go ahead, big boy. You think it's so easy?
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. Go get your cross. And go, you know, didn't I say the same thing? Well, yeah, all right, Lord. I don't see it that way anymore. Yeah, maybe it wasn't that easy to do. All right. But, you know, hey, I have wicked thoughts go through my head, and I usually play them out, and you know, and this is where it goes. And Dale, you'll really appreciate this. I just remember one time pulling over to the side of the road, because Bill Randall had been preaching this thing, had a bunch of young preacher boys, and he just loved to call us sissy pants. He just loved to call us whiny crybabies. He just loved to get in your face and tell you what a little wimp you were and how you can't take anything. And that kind of stuff. And he'd have loved it if you took a swing at him. You know, he just as soon had you do it. You know? And
now, what does that remind us of?
But regardless, he'd just go through and he'd get on your case about all that stuff. And, oh, you know, your boss giving you a hard time. Think what Jesus Christ went through. And there's one particular time it's getting to me, because I'm feeling sorry for myself. And, yeah. Oh, it's so sad. Nobody knows how hard I have it and such. And, you know, and I'm thinking that way. And so I'm bitter with the Lord because I'm trying to think why this is worse. And all of a sudden it occurred to me, I know what I've got. I have a sin nature. You didn't have to deal with a sin nature. And the verse hit me in my soul, he hath made him to be sin for us that knew no sin. He did know what a sin nature was like. And on that cross, he absolutely, and I remember just pulling my car over by the side of the road, just stunned sitting there and realized, oh my goodness, there's nothing I can say to him whereby he can't say, yes, I know exactly what you're going through. I know exactly what it is. Verse 25, for what is a man advantaged if he gain the whole world and lose himself or be cast away? What's he getting? You know, the Filipinos all brought up Marcos. You older people remember when Ferdinand Marcos was in charge of the Philippines. And Ferdinand Marcos was an unbelievable billionaire. He milked every bit of money out of the Philippines everywhere he could, and the strong man, and people trembled, and then they remembered when he died. And they'd quote this all the time about him and the idea, hey, what did it advantage him? What good did any of that do him? Do you realize one of the richest men in the world, and they can't measure his wealth, but it's estimated in high billions, but it's Fidel Castro. In other words, what do you think happened when he nationalized everything? He's the grand poobah. It's all his. And it's hard to estimate what it is, but from time to time, and what's it going to be when he dies? Okay? You know, gain the whole world and you got nothing to show for it. Nothing, absolutely. You know, they're not going to take and send bank statements, you know, to the mortuary. You know, it's over, it's done. And then he says this, verse 26, for whosoever shall be ashamed of me, whosoever shall be ashamed of me and of my words, of him shall the Son of Man be ashamed, when he shall come in his own glory and in his Father's and the holy angels. And I've told this over and over again, but I'll say it again here. I think every one of us has suffered at one time or another in our life, most of the time as children, but it happens as adults sometimes. You might be a kid somewhere, and maybe you and somebody else were playing together all day long. Might have been your cousin, might have been the neighbor kid. You had a ball, played in the barn, played in the side yard and everything, the two of your best of buddies. But then you go into town, and all the cool people show up, and suddenly your cousin doesn't want to be seen with you anymore. You know, suddenly that your playmate doesn't want to be seen with you anymore. You're not cool anymore. They had fun when it's just the two of you alone. But now, they back off, and you're not cool anymore, and they're ignoring you, and ashamed to be near you, and such. And it's humiliating. I've had it happen. Almost everybody I know has stories like that they tell where someone's done it to them. Jesus Christ has it happen to him all the time. Okay? Every one of you spends time with him and alone, and oh, Jesus, and you're this, and you're that to me. And then you get in a crowd of people somewhere, and...
Yep. That's it.
You know, and suddenly he's not cool anymore. He's not cool to be around. And he just said, he'll remember it. Okay? Yeah, he will remember it.
Yes.
And you don't want to be that person. You don't want to be. For one thing, it's such a terrible person to be.
Yes, sir.
Okay? If he didn't remember, it's so terrible for you to be that kind of a person.
Does that remind me? Who was the one person in the Bible who denied Jesus three times?
Peter.
I'm just curious, because that particularly reminded me.
But there, it's a good case, okay? Peter was ashamed of him at that time. And that's why that verse where it says, and then Jesus looked at him, and then it hit Peter, and he wept, okay? I have a friend of mine, and I can only imagine this, but he just told the story one day reading his Bible somewhere and read that verse and went and just wept and wept. You know how it is when a verse touches. Yeah. I've never had that verse touch me that way, but I remember that guy telling me. It was Billy. And he just told me he just went and just wept and wept. And you know, it just hit him so hard what it was. You know, there's Peter denying Jesus Christ. And never thought he'd do it. Boasted he wouldn't do it. And then Jesus just looks at him. And then Peter went and wept. And just a hard thing. It says, you're ashamed of him and ashamed of his words. Verse 27, but I tell you a truth, there be some standing here which shall not taste of death till they see the kingdom of God. Now, let's see. Well, let's read. We may have to go back over this again next week, but we'll read a little bit more here. And it came to pass about an 8 days after these sayings, he took Peter and John and James and went up into a mountain to pray. By the way, this is something Bill Randall went on all the time. He had 12 disciples, but there were three in the inner group. Okay? And he just said, you can be a Christian, or you can make up your mind to be one of those in the inner group.
That's good.
That's up to you. Do you want to be one of those in the inner group? Do you want to be, you know, McVay called me the other day, we're talking. He was just rejoicing that out of nowhere, the Lord spent a couple hours with him the other day. You know, or he just poured his soul through him. Just as he prayed, God was more real to him. And McVay and I just talked about that thing. You can't make that happen.
No.
I've tried. But when it does happen, it's a glorious thing. And I rejoice for McVay. I just rejoice for him that he had that time. You know, it's just such a wonderful thing when it happens. But, you know, whether or not you want to be in that inner group, it's up to you. Verse 29, and as he prayed, the fashion of his countenance was altered, and his raiment was white and glistering. That's a fascinating word there in the King James Bible. The only time it's used. Never really used in English after that. You'd have a hard time finding that anywhere in literature. But glistering. And you can just see that. We call it glittering, but it's just glistering, it calls it. And behold, there talked with him two men, which were Moses and Elias, who appeared in glory and spake of his decease, which he should accomplish at Jerusalem. Didn't say which he should suffer, which he should accomplish. Remember last week I talked about that idea of, and not in the Bible study, but talked about it, actually where you missed at 1 o'clock. How did that wedding go? You endured it? Okay, you endured it. You know, you did the right thing. Honor. Oh, they canceled?
Yeah, the crowd fell off.
Oh, that was lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, but you honored her anyway. God will bless that. And that might be the best thing that could happen.
They're married already. They were just going to have a formal...
All right. But again, it got canceled. And you honored her. You did your thing. But regardless of that, we talked at the 1 o'clock about this idea that prophecy isn't God figuring out what's going to happen. It's God commanding what's to happen. That's why it says his decease, which he should accomplish. In other words, it's yours to do. It's been prophesied. Now you go do it. That prophecy is commanding you to go there. Prophecy isn't him figuring out where the dominoes are all going to end up. Prophecy is him commanding the dominoes to end up in those places. So his decease, which he should accomplish, okay? All right, you know what? We will stop right there. And we'll pick up on that next week. So John Battis, would you close us in prayer?